Hi everyone, welcome back to Retrospect. I'm your host Morgan Johnson, and today we are going to be talking about sensationalism on social media. And today I'm joined with
Sukriti.
So, Sukriti, before we start our discussion, do you want to start us off with some context for what we're going to be talking about today?
Sure. All right. So, in the realm of political discourse on social media, we find ourselves navigating a landscape that is completely riddled with sensationalism and fervor. And every time we log into a social media app like Instagram or TikTok, we're confronted with a huge amount of opinions, polarizing viewpoints, emotionally charged debates. And from the corridors of power to the digital soapboxes of everyday citizens, platforms like Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and beyond have become battlegrounds where political ideologies clash in real time. In this environment, nuance often takes a backseat to sensationalist rhetoric, where complex issues are distilled into soundbites and memes, and the pursuit of truth becomes obscured by the pursuit of virality. As we wade through the sea of digital discourse, it becomes increasingly vital to critically assess the information presented to us and engage in meaningful dialogue that transcends the bounds of sensationalism.
Okay, so let's start off with a discussion question. And our first question is, what responsibilities do social media companies have in addressing political sensationalism on their platforms? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think opinions on this vary. I know Elon Musk is probably going to disagree with me, considering he fired most of the censorship kind of area. But I think social media companies have a huge responsibility in addressing political sensationalism, because whether we like it or not, social media has become the way the majority of the population consumes news. And I think it is like an ethical responsibility to make sure that the news that is being shared is reliable and is truthful. And I think there's a very fine line between like free speech and censorship and you know, misinformation. So I think it's important that, I think Twitter, before Elon Musk took over, or X, I guess we call it now, was doing a really good job of, you know, making sure they flag everything that might be construed as false. So I think there's a huge responsibility. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that social media companies and their platforms have a responsibility, but I have trouble grappling or like processing how that can be done, especially when there's so much information being put out onto these platforms. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it can be, I feel like that's like overwhelming, because obviously you want like a real person to be wading through all of these things that are being talked about and finding the truth and reality and everything about it. But I think it is something they have to do. But I think lately, especially with like Twitter and X, like I know they still have community notes, but I feel like community notes aren't always relevant. Or the only time I see community notes are on like a meme or something with like a celebrity, and they're like, they actually said this, and it's not something that's like, did we really need a community note for that? I mean, yeah, we did, but it's not like top priority. Right. So I think they have a responsibility, but I feel like that responsibility is definitely evolving mm-hmm. and changing. And I think, not to bring AI into it, but AI, I feel like that responsibility might be directed towards AI.
Absolutely.
And AI is still very new and it's not fully developed. It's still, AI has bias, and bias, if the AI is created with bias, it has bias, and that adds like another layer to things. So I know there is a responsibility, but I just don't know how they're tackling it now and how they continue to tackle it, if it's going to be going down the right path.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think just kind of shifting to the consequences of the lack of regulation, I think is you kind of create this like echo chamber between these groups, right? These extremist groups, you're surrounded by just, I mean, your feed is tailored to what you interact with, right? And I really like that on Instagram. You know, I have like a bunch of self-care quotes, but you know, that also becomes very dangerous when we discuss like gun rights, for example, right? You're only surrounded by people that are pro gun rights. And so your opinion you think is the majority opinion because that's the only thing you're surrounded with. And that creates a lot of polarization because there is just a lack of perspective on different things. And I think even like news companies, like you see Fox News, which is so far right, and CNN, which is so far left. And it's like, you know, you can be right leaning and left leaning, but it's to the point where it's like, if you watch one news channel, you are only surrounded by like-minded individuals, and that can become very dangerous.
Yeah, and I think a perfect example of this would be in the summer of 2020 when BLM was very much at the forefront mm-hmm. of the news, and when information was being presented, it was very, very biased right. on sides, and it wasn't presenting the full story. And I think what a lot of us forget to do is when we see this information, to delve deeper in it, not to just take things at face value. And I think that a lot of that has to do with media literacy and how mm-hmm. a lot of people just see it and they don't investigate further or have the desire to go examine things and, you know, fact check and go to multiple sources. Right. And they'll just take what they see, the Instagram post, the headline, and not seek out additional information, which is not something we should do because, you know, you want to have the full story. You don't want to just have a headline. And typically these headlines are just there to rope you in, and they're not telling you the full story.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I have to say, I think I was like 15, summer of 2020, and I was very much guilty of being kind of swept up in the whole like sensationalist movement. I'd say I did a fair amount of research into the history of the BLM movement, but I mean, when it came to like reposting things on Instagram, and I think we discussed this before as well, is like, if you weren't active on Instagram at that point in time and like actively stating your stance on the BLM movement, you were considered like a xenophobe, basically, right? Like you're a racist, right? You're afraid of change. Where in reality, like, I think I didn't understand this at the time, but you don't have to use social media as a form of activism. It is one form of activism. So I think a great example of this is that it was like Blackout Tuesday, where everyone posted black squares on Instagram. That was like, I thought that was like the final, like, if you support BLM or not, you know? And I think that I was reading an article on it, and basically what it did was it diverted attention from actual resources to just people posting black squares. And that did absolutely nothing for the actual movement. Raising awareness is a part of it, but what people forget, and I think what creates this like sensationalist aspect, is that there are more parts of activism, and there are steps that come after raising awareness, right? And that involves getting in touch with legislators and maybe going to protests and things like that. And I think people get caught up in, like you said, those Instagram headlines and those Twitter headlines, and think that's the end all be all.
Yeah, I think that we forget that social media isn't everything. And as much as it can spread messages and stuff, not everybody is active on social media or looks at it. There's right. plenty of people whose screen times are not in 8 hours and are completely disconnected and are only on their phone for the bare necessities. And that a lot of the actions and steps that make things so successful happen outside of the online and digital space. And I think, especially for Gen Z, that might feel odd because, you know, we've been raised on social media. We grew as the internet grew, and it's been so intertwined and immense, like so important in our lives. But, you know, that wasn't past generations. That wasn't it for them. You know, we have, since we've been young, have been broadcasting ourselves out into the world and have, it's been like our number one priority. You know, we've had Snapchat. We all were wearing the dog filter, posting on our Snapchat story, rate me out of 10. Like, we were all, you know, a lot of our validation and a lot of our thought processes are communicated through social media. But I think what a lot of us forget is the outside world and how that plays a part. You know, we're all social media is our curation. You know, we want to seem perfect. We want to have all of the happy moments, all of the sad moments. And as social media lately, it's been kind of evolving into trying to be more real. That's still curated. And, you know, we're broadcasting ourselves more than, you know, any other generation. You know, we're connected so much that I think we forget that not everything has to live online. You know, that everything doesn't have to live through an Instagram story. A lot of your work can be done in real life. And also it can be paired and augmented with digital work as well.
I think just adding on to that, it's important. And I'm guilty of this, I will say, is that it's so easy to get swept up. And I mentioned earlier, like, become an echo chamber. And I had a lot of people call me out on that, which, thank God. But, you know, what happens is that, like, you end up, it's so necessary to understand that people don't actually always have to be on social media.
Social media doesn't have to be such a big part of our lives. I think that past generations, millennials now, they have a different relationship with social media than we have as Gen Z individuals. So I think that's a very interesting relationship to have, because I was talking to somebody, which you will also hear a conversation of later, that, you know, we are very much broadcasting and sharing everything, while before, for many generations, it's just meant to be like a highlight reel. But, you know, with us, it's like everything is there. Everything, like tweeting, I just had cereal, is cool. But, you know, a lot, that doesn't have to be the norm. Having everything on social media doesn't have to be the norm. All of my thoughts can, you know, I can keep things separated. I can keep things in boxes. You know, certain things can be shared here. You know, I'm so happy to talk in person and share anything. But everything doesn't have to be online. And I think that's very important, because, you know, I think a lot of activism, we forget that the digital space, as big as it is, it, you know, a lot of things have to happen in person. There's a lot of steps towards change, and there's a lot of steps towards calling people out and calling things out and finding change. But all of it doesn't have to live online. It can be moved to real life.
Right. I think just adding on to the highlight reel part, I think it's really, really important to remember that everything you view, I think we're kind of focusing on Instagram. So like everything you view on Instagram, for example, is a highlight reel. So like sometimes people choose not to talk about politics on Instagram, but that doesn't make them any less concerned about the issue. And what I was seeing a lot, especially recently with issues, you know, around the world, is that like people are posting, you know, even during the BLM movement, like violent videos, right? And that's not doing anything. Honestly, I mean, I believe social media should be used for information, not for just like kind of filling people's feed with like violence that doesn't necessarily do anything but make people feel bad, you know? And it's important to understand the broader consequences of that. And I don't know how much, I think it's important to realize social media really, you can't really separate social media anymore from our lives. Like it's inherently a part of our lives. So I think just figuring out a way that we can bring in news literacy. And I think this actually goes back to the point of like, what responsibilities do social media companies have, is that like, they have a responsibility to filter out videos that don't really do much other than like, possibly even, you know, kind of use people's deaths as a way to like market and to broadcast your opinion. You know, I think it's important to remember that, like, you know, these deaths mean something, and it's the information behind those deaths and behind that violence that is important, not that violence itself.
Yeah, I think we live at a time where we can see absolutely everything, and that is both very, very useful and can be very informative, but it can also be at a detriment. I think pertaining videos online, I think at time, as much as it's, I find that, you know, I feel like it can, I think that at times they can, I feel like people, especially online, don't believe things until they see it. And I feel like sometimes words aren't enough to show what's happening. I don't know how to describe how the videos, like, they're horrific and terrible, but they also can be something that changes somebody's mind because they're actively seeing what's happening, and that sometimes words on a page, they feel so disconnected for people that they, until they actually see something and see how grave and how severe it is, until they see that, they don't have a connection or an opinion or feeling towards it. But also, I think these platforms have to censor things because obviously some of these videos are absolutely terrible and should not be something that you can just casually stumble upon, right? Which
I think, yeah, I have an interesting question to pose then. Like, how much is too much? You know, I think these videos, like body cam footage, for example, or you know, on the ground footage from the wars and stuff, and it's just like, how much becomes too much to the point where we're just desensitized? You know, I feel like these videos should only be shown, I don't think they should ever be shown on social media. I just think that's my opinion. But I think it should be shown with a background of information, you know, of context, right? Because context is everything. Context can change, completely change your perspective, right? You know, or like sometimes news outlets take like clips from interviews or something. This is like a much less severe example, but like if you think about the British royals, right? Like they'll take a little small snippet of an interview or a celebrity interview, and they'll put a whole different context to it. And it'll be like, all of a sudden that celebrity's problematic, when in reality, that's not at all what was happening. You know, it was an answer to a different question, maybe, you know, but I think there needs to be accurate information, accurate sources to back it up, which I think the Black Lives Matter movement, a lot of those like aesthetic infographics never actually had. And so a lot of it has to have context and actual wording. Otherwise, I feel like it can completely backfire. And there's this thing, NBC talks about it, Chelsea Miller, a leading organizer in New York, she talks about this word called slacktivism. And basically what it is like half-hearted social media-based activity, performative allyship, virtue signaling, all of these things, right? There's a fine line between using social media to increase awareness and then slacktivism. Just saying, hey, I'm a good person, don't forget. Like, don't forget I actually care about it. You know?
Yeah, I feel like that term definitely summarizes a lot of the passivity that happens. But back to what you were saying about the desensitization of everything, I think that is a big fear for, I feel like, our future is being desensitized to these things. And I definitely think videos that don't show full clips or, you know, pause and then show the information and don't, I feel like those are very effective because they're not showing everything, the whole thing. But I feel like a lot of people during BLM specifically, when people were showing themselves getting stopped, it really showed like the gravity of what was happening, and
that's
really
true.
That really showed people that, yeah, this happens and this is my everyday life. And I don't think if enough people didn't see it that we would see the big outcries that happened and culminated in 2020.
Yeah, I think just adding on to that, it's important, like you said, you know, I definitely think I watched some very interesting, like, I don't want to say day in the life because that's not exactly what it was, but it was like, you know, this is what it is to live as a Black American. This is what it is to, like, what we do when we get stopped by the police. Or I was watching this show called All American, which I think did an amazing job in raising awareness of what it's like for, in daily life, for someone, like, for a Black American to kind of, you know, live in, he lived in, like, a lower income neighborhood and constantly had, like, stop-ins with the police and things like that. So that's a really good way of raising awareness. There was context, there was explanation, there was like a critical lens to it. And I think, again, Chelsea Miller from NBC, she says this really interesting thing, like, what does it look like? We need to shift the conversation, talk about sustainability and activism. And then what does it look like to make sure that the message does not end when the lights and cameras turn off, right? And I think that means like when there's another big thing that happens and all of a sudden the shift isn't like, or the focus isn't on the BLM movement or the elections or something like that, right? And I think this is, we can kind of move on to the question of like, what can we do as common people and as a public and individuals to identify and combat political sensationalism through our own social media consumption habits?
I think that having steam and having active participation constantly and having it constantly be at the forefront of, you know, platforms on people's mind, I think that is definitely something that is being worked on, because I think a lot of times we see these big moments and then, you know, in media they dissipate, but in the activism world and in organizations, their work never stops. But, you know, I think social media moves on to its next, I don't want to say trend, but fad moment that it's going to keep capturing. And, you know, we see those memes on Instagram or Twitter where it's like, here was March of 2020, like, here's what happened and here were the highlights. And, you know, you forget that half of these things happened because,
oh my God,
everything,
yes,
is constantly cycling and something is always
like 2020 edits.
Yeah, oh, something, God, is, yeah, always new and something's always happening and something's always the new moment. So I think that how, you know, individuals can combat this sensationalism is just, you know, constantly, I mean, following organizations, I think following activists, following people in places that are going to keep you informed on whatever the issue may be. And also, while doing that, not going out and doing additional information, you know, having possibly like a day in the week where you're like, I'm going to go to multiple different news organizations, I'm going to go to different news platforms, I'm going to go research a bunch about what's happening today, what's been happening in the past 2 months, you know, trying to actively stay informed. I think that's how we combat it. And, you know, working on dissecting, you know, the verbiage of what's being said, you know, the difference between different languages and how, you know, language is very influential to what is being said, you know, the difference between they died versus they were killed versus they murdered, like, those are all,
absolutely,
like, we have to be aware of, you know, what verbiage is being used and how that can influence us, and knowing and identifying that, and then, you know, forming your opinion and seeing, okay, now I know, finding out how you want to share, how you want to help out, or, you know, having this information so if people come to you, you can share what you know, and then hopefully that will spread the message.
Yeah, absolutely. I think to add on to that as well, like, looking at things through a critical lens, through an objective lens, right? Forming educated opinions, I think, is a big one. I think seeing, you know, TikTok filters or, you know, Snapchat filters, whatever, they do the first step. They raise awareness. They bring the issue to the forefront, which is really, really important, right? But there are steps after that, right? There are steps, I mean, you have to take action, you know? Okay, if I see, for example, like, I mean, the Black Lives Matter movement, I found out because of social media, because of Instagram and Twitter. And after that, you go on actual objective news platforms, right? Like AP News, New York Times, these reliable news sources. You read about the issue, you read about the context, like you mentioned, right? The verbiage is so important. And then, you know, after that, you can form an opinion. You know, I don't think having an opinion is ever wrong. Like, that's what our democracy is based on. You know, that's how we have a successful functioning government and country. But that doesn't happen if we don't have reliable information, if we don't take the extra step and learn about the issue for ourselves and don't have opinions fed to us. You know, I think that's a big thing that's happening on social media, is we're having these opinions thrown at us and like stuffed down our throats. And if you have a different opinion, you're a bad person. Where it's like, it's okay to have an opinion, but it has to be educated and it has to be from reliable sources. And those sources, I feel like, need to be more readily available. I feel like it's very hard to find where these things come from on social media. Like, where are we getting this information? And just like looking at it through that critical lens and being like, okay, this makes sense, but let me read more about it. You know, and I think that's a skill that needs to be implemented very early on. I think this is kind of really broad and over time, but I think our education system, I mean, I know in English class I learned a lot about, especially in AP Lang, I don't know if you did this, rhetorical analysis, but just looking at things and being like, hey, okay, this is what it's saying, why is it saying that, you know, the five W's and H's and whatever. I think that's very important.
Yeah, and I think people have to also remember that it's okay if you get things wrong. You know, there's always
Oh,
room to
yeah.
grow. There's always room to grow, and that, it's okay to make mistakes, but learn from them and address them for yourself and see, okay, I interpreted this wrong. I didn't see the full picture, recognizing, okay, that had bias in it, and finding something that's going to tell both sides of the story, or looking at the two sides and then deducing the objectivity that should be in the middle of both of those. And I think through that and through, familiarizing yourself with various news sources, various news organizations that then you can work towards finding a system that works best for you of staying educated and learning and, not just basing everything off of social media and infographics and growing and moving past that. Now, Sukriti, do you have anything else you'd like to share today?
I think I'd just add like making sure you identify your own bias, so bias of news sources, but also your own bias and where you come from and how that factors in. But yeah, I think that's a big thing, that sensationalism is very, very important, a very important issue that we need to talk about, especially with the upcoming elections in November. And yeah, I really appreciate this conversation.
Thanks guys for listening. Bye.